And we are back with episode 252 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and, well, since I've been in love with her since the stuntman, Barbara Hershey can massage my heart anytime.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and although Snow White was recently in Disneyland, I'm still glad she's made it back to this town in general and out of fairy tale land.
And I am Brunson from Australia. There are two different camps of people who want Mulan and Aurora to go off and have their own show. I'm in the camp that wants them to go off and have their own show so that they're not in this one.
And all I can say is, Helena, if you are going to run away from Starling City, you can come in this direction if you choose. You can exact vengeance in my town any day. All right. Clearly, we're going to be talking about Once Upon a Time, then some Burn Notice, and then wrapping it up with Arrow. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We are likely to discuss just about anything in these episodes, so you are likely to be spoiled. However, as always, we've waited at least a week or so before we do that, so you've had a chance to watch them.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to go ahead and get started right away with an episode of Once Upon a Time. We're a little bit behind on that as well, so we're going to be covering two episodes. And here's the first.
There was a little boy. He said his name was Henry. It was a dream. How could you dream of my son?
2 weeks from tonight.
They're alive!
Dreams hold the key to reuniting a family.
We have a way home now.
Unless a living nightmare.
Rise.
Stands in their way.
This is too dangerous.
They need your help.
I'm sure you're okay to do this, kid.
Emma, watch out!
I'm done reading about heroes. I want to be one.
Yeah, so this was Once Upon a Time's attempt at The Walking Dead. Great. All right, Edmund.
Yeah, Community did a better zombie episode.
Yes. Edmund, why don't you go ahead and do the recap?
Sure. This is Once Upon a Time, Season 2, Episode 8, Into the Deep. While Regina and Gold put David at risk in the hope that it will lead them to marry Margaret in the Enchanted Forest, Emma and Mary Margaret must stop Cora from taking the recently acquired compass from them. Fairy tale land zombie apocalypse that was promised came up well short. Besides the fact we've had this sort of ongoing escalation of just what you can do with a heart, I must admit I found that part a little bit strange, that yes, they introduced this arm and didn't really do anything with it. But, most of this episode revolving around sleeping curses. And what I didn't quite understand is the whole thing of, Henry's already got the curse. He's going to go to sleep anyway. So
yes.
Why were they so intent on protecting him other than just to, get David / Charming, under the curse? So as the synopsis said, they could put him at risk. So, that felt a little clunky to me. Nice as it was to have them, finally, briefly reunited. The good was that they were finally bringing this to a close, but it still felt a little clunky in the way they were doing it. Set up for the episode that we are about to talk about next. In some ways, looking at both of these together, I wound up sort of feeling like, this whole first half of the season was just this great big long prologue to finally start getting into the meat of the conflicts they've been setting up. Certainly feeling like, this really did not need to take eight and nine episodes to get through, in terms of where they've wound up.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. This episode actually felt so much like extraneous. Is that the word because like you said, all they did was come up with some bizarre reason why David had to be the one to be in the curse, and there wasn't really a basis for it in the story.
It was just let's find a different lead to put in danger.
Right. Because
I can understand it if the actor had to go off to make a Thor movie, but he doesn't.
No.
That being said, I thought how they did come up with the idea that both he and Snow had to meet was rather novel versus Gold pulling yet another mystery box off his shelf. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the sort of background on how they had to, put the spell together on both ends, so to speak, to make it work. I thought it was an entertaining little exercise that they did do. So I did enjoy that. The part that I had a big problem with was, wait a minute, now Hook can pull hearts out of people's chests too?
Yeah.
I'd always assumed this was some special, you know, like wizard or, you know, witch power. Now all of a sudden Hook can do it too. I guess I don't want to play three card Monty with him either anymore, but I'm just, it just seemed like, okay, this is now a cheap parlor trick that anybody and their brother can just shove their fist into somebody. I didn't buy that part of it.
Hmm. Yeah. It seemed to come out of nowhere. Yeah. And they just dropped it in right, you know, right at the start. There were a lot of things that were right at the start that just kind of seemed dropped in, but there we are.
But yeah, I agree. This did nothing to advance the overarching storyline, and in and of itself, it really wasn't much of a story, but you know, to stand on for itself as an episodic piece either.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I literally just watched this episode a few hours ago, and I'm struggling to remember anything about it to talk about. It just was there. That's not a good thing.
I'll say they finally, you know, played their hand in terms of their excuse of why. Well, for the second time, their excuse for why Aurora is around.
Hmm.
Because I mean, they've doubled up on excuses because they understand that she's kind of a boring character. So self-awareness points, maybe.
Maybe.
No, not so much.
No.
But yeah, not only do we have was there this thing of you know, her having been in a dream sleep, she'd be able to go to the burning room on the edge of forever or wherever the hell it is and talk to Henry, but now she's the spy. She's kind of a bad guy. So that's
kind of
something for the future episodes, I guess. Yeah, I get like it's just more and more setup.
But it doesn't take a whole episode to show you that.
Yeah. Except she's not really a bad guy, she's just a puppet. So
she's just played that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you got it ahead of me.
Yeah, cause that was sort of that was the other thing. I mean, all the stuff going on with Hearts in this episode, it was like, you know, okay, yes, they can raise the dead, they can, you know, can control someone, it's, you know, and you can pull it out and they won't drop, you know, just peel over. And it's like, you know, okay, guys, you know, how many ways are we going to retcon Hearts in this series now? So.
Oh, there are so many.
Yeah.
Come on. All right. Yeah. I mean, Gary, maybe you can use Siri to and ask her, you know, what was the point of Aurora being on Once Upon a Time? But
she says she's not a critic, yes.
Okay.
That's... Siri, locate plot. No, locate point.
Yes, that would be difficult.
I'm sorry, no, I can't do that for you right now. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's go ahead and wrap this one up because we really don't have much to say about it. What would you give it, Brunt Thumb?
Oh, I was afraid you'd go to me first.
It's the trend.
It is the trend. I am going to go a 6. Like, this was just a... I just found it dull. I found it so concerned with, you know, let's do something awesome later that they didn't bother with doing something awesome now. And with that pathetic excuse for zombies. What the hell?
Okay. Gary, how about you?
I'm going to give it a 7, even though I didn't necessarily feel they had any real ongoing story about this. Aurora showing to be possessed was a nice little twist for me, and I did enjoy the whole setup with Snow and Charming meeting up in the dream state, so I'll give it a 7.
Edmund, how about you?
I'll drop back down to a 6, and... As you were saying, in my case, it's because I did actually watch it when it was first on, but I was having trouble remembering. But I also do just want to point out that, yes, this was the episode where they actually managed to have people waxing rhapsodic about ketchup. Just as a sign of having to find other people to talk about.
Oh, that's just beautiful. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 6 as well. I don't think that it... I think that this is where I really feel that the season has started to fall into the same issues as the first season did, where after the first third or so of the season, it just started to lose itself. And yeah, we had that blip with the Halloween episode, but beyond that, the first 6 or 7 episodes weren't terrible, but this was definitely a drop. And I'll be interested to see if in the next episode we have any better feeling about the whole thing. So why don't we go ahead and just very quickly jump right on to that episode as well. And here is the promo.
Sunday on the winter finale of Once Upon a Time.
Time for making deals is done.
The Masters of Evil join forces.
Things are about to change radically.
For a devastating act of vengeance.
It's time.
The episode that sets the stage for the season return in January.
Let's go home! You're gonna kill them!
No one can survive this.
Alright, so we have... Let's see, what do we got here? We have the Masters of Evil. Does that mean that, Baron Zemo and all of those villains from the Marvel Universe are coming over, since Disney owns them too? No? Okay.
Well, if they bring over Joss as well, we might be able to sell
it. Yeah, we might be able to do something with it, right?
I've been saying this for ages. Given the number of properties that Disney owns, what are we going to see on Once Upon a Time first? A Jedi or an Avenger?
Doctor Strange is going to come in.
I'm guessing along will come a Spider-Man. Yes.
Yes, there we go. There you go. No, I was sure thinking that there'd be a more appropriate crossover with DC and Fables, or if they really wanted to spice things up, let's get the Xenoscope comics involved in this. But yeah, right.
I'm sorry, I stopped at Xena.
Yeah, please don't get our explicit tag going to me.
Oh no, that only happens when we have Homeland promos. Anyway, Carrie, why don't you give us the recap for this episode?
Absolutely. We're talking about Season 2, Episode 9, Queen of Hearts. After Emma's betrayal, Hook allies himself with Korra to recover the compass from Emma and Mary Margaret. Meanwhile, Regina and Gold learn that Korra plans to open the portal and prepare to do whatever it takes to stop Korra and Hook from coming through that portal to get their revenge. It's not totally inaccurate. Although I thought at this point, is the name Mary Margaret, I thought it had gone away pretty much. Isn't it just snow all the time now?
No, they've been saying Mary Margaret pretty regularly.
Have they? Okay. It's just something I must have overlooked that. But anyway, Korra seems to be exhibiting powers to the level of, why is she having any problem getting anything from anybody? She's using some sort of almost telekinesis. She can grab people, pull people, like using the Force, Jedi mind tricks.
And that's that bet settled.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so that's the, I mean, that's
so
there.
So be it, Snow White.
She can create water from dry lake beds. Why is this woman having a hard time getting a compass from a wooden box from two other women who have no powers? It makes no sense to me, other than, you know, plot devices, of course. So that's a little bit frustrating. Then, secondly, if Gold and Regina were this concerned over Korra, it seemed like they would have taken steps well before this to protect themselves. And I also find it hard to believe that, you know, Gold or Rumpelstiltskin, whichever name you want to use, doesn't have something else already planned to take care of Korra besides blocking the portal. Or at least I hope he does, because as we saw at the end of this, she didn't need that whole portal after all. So getting the compass and creating this lake to drop into the portal was completely unnecessary. She could have just hitched a ride with
Hook to go to Haven instead.
Right. Because that's what it looked like.
Yeah. I know.
She could have just hooked, got on Hook's thing the whole time. Why did they go through all this?
Because so they needed 10 episodes or 9 episodes to get to the mid-season finale.
I thought that might be the answer. It wasn't the one I was hoping to hear, but yes, that is probably right. So that being said, the special effects were very nice. A lot of it the story just seemed rather pointless to me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all the promise that we thought that they had when they went into Fairy Tale Land, the Enchanted Forest and everything, it just seemed to have petered out.
Yeah.
And like you said, the biggest problem is that we've seen Rumpelstiltskin, the Dark One, and Regina as these almost uber powerful people, and now we've got someone who's supposed to be even worse than they ever could be, and it just doesn't make any sense that these people are remotely threatening to her. It, like you were saying, Gary, it just... It doesn't come together correctly.
Yeah, and then the point that they didn't need to go through any of these exercises anyway, because when they failed, they just, we'll go hop on the boat then. What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this dried up bean I've got. We can just use that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that was...
You can put water on it.
Yes.
Wow. You're going to war.
Well, apparently, they didn't have basic agriculture in the Enchanted Forest.
Well, they didn't need it because they just had people use magic. And everything. Yes.
Right. Of course. Yes.
No 4-H club. I got you.
Apparently not.
But so, you know, so the surprise ending, I guess, where we see them coming to Storybrooke was just basically gutted the whole episode before it. So.
Oh, it gutted basically the 5 episodes before it. I mean, it just, it made no sense of it whatsoever. It just felt so tacked on. Almost like they wanted to say, see how clever we were? We made you think that this was the only way that they could do it. But no, they had a way in their back pocket the entire time. So was the only point so that they could try and get rid of their competition along the way? But if they just went over to Storybrooke, the competition wouldn't have been a factor anyway. They would have.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that probably annoyed me most about this episode was them just being so explicit with, you know, Henry, you know, just going on and on about, oh, you know, good defeats evil, good defeats evil, and it's like, you know, I'm just remembering back to, you know, when this show started and sort of, you know, that initial seven episode run, you know, leading up to Heart is a Lonely Hunter, where, you know, it was like, wow, this is really amazing how they're updating this and making them, you know, giving it nuance and making them, you know, what, you know, real, you know, human characters. And to have gone from that to a season later, you know, where, you know, no, it's just this straight good versus evil morality.
It's a bad episode of The Legend of the Seeker.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, exactly. Don't me. Oh, jeez, I missed that show. Oh, sorry.
Yes, not that Legend of the Seeker had any bad episodes, Gary.
Don't open that can of worms, sir. Do not open that can of worms. I'll have Zed throwing spells all over you. Anyway, but
I would prefer that, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, they tried to make Snow kind of like... Oh, anyway, let's not go there. But no, I mean, I do enjoy certain aspects of it. I enjoy the fact that they've done a very good job of convincing me that Regina and Rumpelstiltskin have, to this point, more or less gone on this path of redemption. I mean, it's not 100% sure that they have, which I like, but they certainly are playing up this, well, they are the lesser of two evils. Or the lesser two of four evil, whatever.
I still don't.
The lesser of three evils.
I don't know, but they're at least showing that they are trying, and that's something. I mean, conceptually, it's an interesting direction to take, but I don't know. The execution of these last few episodes has left me very unhappy, and once again, it's like they started off in potentially the right place, and then just faltered, and that's the problem. You know, they do this now two seasons in a row, or are we supposed to now trust that they're going to come back and be able to avoid the same problems that we've seen before? I don't think so. I think that now we feel like this is, you know, we're just hoping that they can pull out of this slump again.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I found this to be, you know, I was fine with Aurora and Mulan to begin with, but now it feels like they really had no idea what to do with them.
Oh, and in fact, have just stranded them back in.
Yes.
Enchanted Forest. So.
Oh, well, bye, guys. We're going off to star in, you know, someone's fanfic.
Yeah, exactly. They were more as fanfic fodder than they were as actual viable characters, which is saying quite a bit. All right, well, then let's go ahead and do this slightly differently. Edmund, what would you give this one?
I'll go with the 6 again. Okay. Well, even then, I'm quite honestly, it's almost like I'm between a 5 and a 6. But I will stick with the 6.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the 6 as well. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's just the pieces aren't coming together the way that they were earlier this season. Gary, how about you?
Oh, I think you're being a little too generous. Even though they did, in a sense, bring the fairy tale expedition to an end, the ending of this episode with Hook and Korra on the ship just seemed to invalidate, as you said, so much of what we've seen in the last few episodes that where I'm hovering around a 6, I'm going to drop to around a 5. I just feel like they're pulling stuff out of thin air, no pun intended. And I don't like that kind of storytelling. They're not setting anything up. They're just dumping it on us because they had a new idea of the week. Oh, wouldn't this be cool? Let's do this. And that's lousy story writing, in my opinion.
Okay, so 5?
Yes.
And how about you, Bronstone?
I'm going to agree with Gary. I think it's a five. It's worthy of a five. It felt like even more of a dip than last week. There was less that I enjoyed. I didn't think it was particularly smart or clever or anything like that. And yeah, just that final scene completely invalidated half of the season so far. It's I just made me want to bang my head against a wall in frustration. Mm. So yes, five. Five okay. is the yes.
And that puts us for this episode now ties with the Doctor as as the lowest scored episode of the season. So there we go. All right, and after nine episodes, that brings us to a 6.9 for this season so far. So just about dead average. Sound right to you?
I think it's generous, but yeah, a little generous maybe. But
well, setting aside the fact that these last few episodes have left us more and more disappointed, disillusioned, the early episodes of the season all were pretty highly ranked. I mean, we definitely all gave the Crocodile a really high rating. Mm. So, I think it balances out. Average sounds right. I mean, if I compare this to something like Revolution, I can say this is better than that, but it does have its issues. So,
It just seems when they introduce some of the ancillary characters that is it that they're not putting enough effort into them? You know, as I was criticizing Hook earlier, that, you know, they're giving him powers just out of nowhere, and he just seemed to be somewhat of a pointless character for where the story ends up. Mm. But yet we see, like as you said, when we see episodes that seem to focus on major characters, like, you know, Rumpelstiltskin, we're gaga over them. They really seem to put their heart into them. And I guess that's sort of the feeling I get, is they really are just shoving some of the stuff at us just for fill.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're just going to have to see how we can, how we react to things when they come back.
And when is this one coming back?
I think they said January in the promo.
January?
So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's actually early January, though. I think it's like January 6th.
Okay.
So just a short holiday break.
Well, yeah, with only nine episodes, they then got quite a few left to spool out in the winter / spring. Well, something tells me that we're not going to be much more favorable towards the next show that we're going to talk about either, since we haven't been for quite some time, but let's go ahead and discuss it anyway. And this would be Burn Notice, and here is the promo.
In 2 weeks.
Next time you see your son, you tell him I'm coming for him.
On the run from the CIA, Michael and his team may have to leave Miami forever.
We need to get out of the country. We're told you're one of the best.
One of the best?
Mike, too dangerous. I don't see another way.
Why am I hearing about this plan just now?
Because we knew you'd get all whiny.
Whiny?
Just hold on. Wake up! Don't shoot me!
Patton Oswalt guest stars.
Yes. Okay, so, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give us this recap?
Sure. This is Burn Notice, Season 6, Episode 14, Down and Out. Michael arranges to be captured by a Syrian intelligence officer in order to rescue an inept smuggler. Riley offers Madeline a deal in hopes of tracking down Michael. Having Patton Oswalt guest star is always a plus, especially since it can help elevate a storyline which might not have been so interesting otherwise. Because it sort of seems like, you know, yes, you know, after setting up this situation of okay, they're on the run, they've got to, you know, get, you know, they've got to get away, they've got this, you know, really badass CIA agent on their tail, but it seems now that, you know, now we're sort of slipping into typical Burn Notice where the CIA is, you know, not being quite as efficient as you think they might be able to be, and you know, for all this talk about having to get out of Miami, they're kind of still hanging around for a while. So, it's the same thing that's been going on for a while now. They cannot deviate from the formula. So you've got to have a case. You've got to have some form of client of the week and something they've got to pull off. Not that this is ever going to be a realistic spy show in any realistic scenario like this. It's like, you know, no, they're going to go to ground and not be running around trying to fool Syrian intelligence operatives. And I mean, actually, just one thing in that promo. I mean, the fact that, you know, yeah, they've got Sam sitting in a hot tub in there, you know, supposed to be trying to get out of the country. It's like, you know, yeah, they're not quite, don't seem to be quite giving this the urgency that you think they should. And,
yeah, I don't remember there being a Hot Springs episode in The Fugitive.
Yeah. Yeah, well, apparently in the Burn Notice world, there is.
There's always time for mojitos.
Yes, I guess so. It does seem just a little bizarre. I mean...
Just a little?
Well, I'm trying to be nice. But no...
Do we have to?
No, I suppose not. That is our job, after all. But the thing is that this is another one of those situations where you'd think that there would be more than enough plot here for them to work with. I mean... It's a logical enough idea that these guys have to get out of Miami and they need help. They should be able to work with this. It's not that arcane a plot device. So why does it seem like they can't get their head around it to make it work? I don't know. It's very frustrating to me. Yeah, the other problem is that, quite honestly, other than Patton Oswalt being in the episode, I really just don't think there was that much to it. I can't really think of what happened in the episode beyond that. And he was okay, but he's very much a matter of personal taste, as most comedy is. So it's one of these deals where it's like, if you really enjoy his brand of comedy, you're probably going to give this one a bit of a pass in terms of its plot weaknesses. But if he's just okay, then all you're going to do is see all the flaws. But anyhow, what would you say is the real takeaway from this episode? Crickets? Crickets? that the writers are dragging out something that should probably just be one big 2 or 3 episode event?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's par for the course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of, yeah, I mean, it's sort of the ongoing problem of the last, you know, season and a half or so, where it's like, they keep, you know, in interviews, they keep saying it's like, oh, we're going to do more of a serialized plot. And the problem is they're trying to do it while just sticking to the same old formula, you know, and in a way it's like, you know, guys, just, you know, you almost want to say, just give it up and, you know, go back to doing, you know, what, you know, might not be, you know, the best television, you know, but at least it would keep things more consistent and not have us, you know, sitting here going, it's like, yeah, well, okay, there's this ongoing story you're supposed to be spooling out, but that's the problem, is that it's just spooling out when it's something that should be, you know, much faster and much more intense. But, you know, but no, we've got to take all these detours along the way.
Well, even if they did want to take, I mean, we're looking at, this is going to be what, 8 episodes before it's all said and done. Mm-hmm. Even if they wanted to do that, which would be fine, I guess, there's so many other ways that they could make this interesting. And we've seen other shows take an 8-episode arc and really just do a bang-up job of it. So how come this show just can't seem to get their head around it? That's what I don't understand. It's not that complicated. Like I said, the idea itself is pretty good for Burn Notice to say, oh, we're going to have this situation where they have to actually leave town because they're being hunted down by the CIA, not just because they're intervening and, you know, he's been burned and all of this stuff, but now they're actively considered criminals. You know, it's a different thing they haven't really exploited. I think it all comes back to when they had that episode where, in the middle of all this, they just have a standard case.
Yeah.
And that just said right off the bat, yeah, they're not going to take this as seriously or as confidently, or competently for that matter, as they could. That they're still going to try and have their cake and eat it too, because they don't feel confident in doing some really big, expansive story, even though they keep saying that that's what they are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, irritating.
Mm-hmm. I know I'm the broken record on this. It's just frustrating because they've spent all these seasons building up the relationships within the team. And, you know, so, yeah, you know, there was more than enough potential there to, you know, yeah, just focus on them, you know, trying to get this major thing done and not, not have to just, you know, go back to, you know, introducing some outside element for them to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, given the hints when they, you know, when they first came back, you know, I am glad that Maddie is still around, but you know, but even there, I mean, it's, you know, they're not sort of, you know, fully taking advantage of that, you know, where, you know, yeah, so she's having her interactions with Riley, you know, I mean, you know, this would seem, you know, this could have been a, you know, an opportunity to, you know, so, you know, really act on stuff they've been hinting at of sort of, you know, bringing her, you know, actually more into the team because they have to, because, you know, of course, I mean, anyway, I mean, you know, this is just going way off on the tangent of, you know, yeah, I mean, it would involve doing it in ways different from what the way they laid this out with the CIA, you know, breathing down her neck. So, no, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, just unfortunately more of the same that we've been getting, you know, for the, you know, the last season or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would you give this one, Edmund?
I would say a six. I mean, because, you know, some of the actual individual stuff going on in the case, you know, wasn't bad. It was just in terms of in the context of what's supposed to be going on around them, it just didn't make sense.
Mm. And how about you, Bronson?
I like Patton Oswalt. That's about all I can really say in the positive for this episode. I'm going to go a... I'll go as low as a five. I'm just so unengaged with Burn Notice, and I used to love this show to bits. It was such good fun, and it's just really lost me. And it's and episodes like this just really showcase what the problem is. Their inability to stick to their guns, to commit to a story arc, and it just insists on trying to do the episodic when the episodic doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they needed to commit completely to the serialized thing in order for this to work the way that they want it to. So, all right, let's see. That I would probably give it. I'll give it a six. It's got potential still. Again, it's very much like the Once Upon a Time or Revolution Before It or so many other shows that it's got pieces that could work if they would just do them better than they are, and we know that the writers are capable of it, but it just seems like they're still not going as far as they could or should. All right, there's got to be something to bring this episode of our show up from the doldrums that it's been in between Once Upon a Time and Burn Notice. Surely there must be. And I think, in fact, there is. Here we go with another episode of Arrow, and here is the promo.
Don't lie to me, Oliver. We're the same, you and I.
It's not justice.
What you do is...
Would you let me show you?
This feels good.
All right, and this would be Arrow, Season 1, Episode 8, Vendetta. Oliver takes Helena under his wing and trains her in the life of a street vigilante. However, Diggle has concerns about Helena, concerns that soon prove true when Helena kills the head of the Triad and puts herself and Oliver at risk. Ooh boy, okay. Bronston, what'd you think of this one?
It was very...
Whoa, sorry about that. Go ahead.
It was a very quick resolution to the ongoing thing with Helena. I was surprised it wrapped up so quickly, because they've really done a good job of establishing that character and this a really good chemistry between her and Oliver, and I expected her to be around for a little longer, and instead it all kind of blew up in the space of one episode. But by the same token, it made for a really big episode. I really enjoyed it. I liked getting into kind of the allegory is probably Person of Interest about a season ago when it started getting into the interplay between bad guys. It was brewing in the last episode, and now it's started to hit full force, and getting to see the impact that Oliver and people like him are having on the city for good and for ill. And I really dug that. And I especially dug the fact that, yeah, like we were saying last week, we've got it. Oliver is sort of taking this opportunity with Helena to try and justify himself.
Mm-hmm.
In trying to teach her his methods and stuff like that, he's trying to legitimize himself, even though there really isn't that much difference between them. And yeah, it's such an interesting thing to do with that character that I really dug it, and it was a really sad way to end the episode. That it all kind of goes to hell.
It does go to hell pretty quickly. That was probably the one thing about this episode that I didn't really like, was just how fast they got rid of the character. Not that they got rid of her. I mean, she's still around, and certainly we've got reason to think that she's going to come back. But it seemed like she was being brought in for a much larger storyline than what it turned out to be for at least the moment. And so it felt slightly rushed. It covered a lot of ground, and I think that there were a couple points in there where if they had used another episode to provide more of the connective tissue, it would have ended up a lot better as a result. The first half of the episode, which was essentially, you know, Oliver and Helena getting their relationship together, was perfectly fine. And that probably could have been an episode all by itself. The second half of the episode, where essentially she goes off the rails and Oliver has to make a choice, well, that could have been an episode by itself, too. Why they had to be one right after the other in the same episode, I'm not entirely sure. That seems a bit too quick for this storyline, but, you know, maybe there were issues with the getting the actress in. I don't know. Maybe they just want to have her come in for a little, you know, for this period, and then there's stuff that has to happen in between for them to really ramp things up. I don't know. It seems just a little too quick, but at the same time, it still was all good material. It just was not as in-depth as perhaps it could have or should have been. But it's like, okay, we're making these complaints. At the same time, it's still good value. I can't really say much more about it. There's nothing that horrible about this episode. It's just
It's easy to talk about the episode when there's big bad stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, we can talk about a lot of things. You know, we have basically Helena officially becoming Huntress now. Yeah. They don't call her that, of course, but that's effectively who she is. And so we have the Arrow version of who she is, which is very different than what a lot of people were expecting. I think that they were expecting her to look a little more like she does in the comic books, although that's way too colorful for this universe. I mean, even Oliver's green is kind of more muted than what one would expect based on his persona in the comics. But I think that, you know, it fit the world that they're trying to create. Just as they've had the villains look a lot more muted than perhaps they would in the comic book version, it makes sense for the heroes to be as well. And I kind of liked the aesthetic of what she was going for. She had a pseudo-Catwoman look, which, given another incarnation of the Huntress, makes perfect sense. And it's at this point that we realize, yet again, that Gary really needs to be watching this show. Mr. DC himself, because, yeah, I mean, he could probably give us an entire dissertation on the differences between the comic book version and this version, but Edmund, you haven't really had a lot to say yet.
I'm certainly in complete agreement that, this felt much too rushed a resolution, and certainly, you know, sort of the impact they were trying to imply it was having on Oliver at the end, you know, didn't really make sense given how rushed it was. And certainly, you know, yeah, I mean, if it had been split to, you know, the episode of him, you know, sort of, you know, teaching her his way of vigilanteism, and that's seeming to take hold, and then her turning the next episode, I mean, would have made a lot more sense. But, some of the character beats I did like. I mean, that the whole sort of dinner party from hell, as she's starting to realize, you know, just what she's walked into, I liked. And also, as a, you know, I thought that, you know, that you know, was a good way of sort of, introducing her, you know, a way to give her some second thoughts about what's going on, just on the personal level, let alone the professional disagreements, shall we say. I mean, also, of course, you know, lurking in the background, you know, we've got Walter learning more about, apparently some of the thing, you know, from another direction, learning some of the things that has been driving Oliver. You know, so that you know, that certainly was had some, was providing some interesting setup for down the road. Basically, I mean, it was, you know, it was in terms of, you know, the actual action and the way, you know, what was the sort of plot points in the episode. You know, it was still very entertaining, and you know, that stuff was well done. It was, you know, but the major takeaway for me was, you know, no, it really didn't need to happen this quickly. You know, unless, you know, we may, you know, 3 episodes from now, we may realize, you know, oh no, but they have to rush all this out so you can, you know, they could get to this next big thing they're setting up. Mm-hmm. So.
Exactly. That's the only thing that really I have in the back of my mind, is that every episode so far has taken Oliver to a different point in his journey, right? I mean, this even does in its own way.
Yeah.
It just does 2 points of it very quickly, which is probably why we're feeling like it's a little rushed, because we wanted to see that play out over a longer period of time. But, you know, one does expect that the very, very first time that he has the opportunity to deal with somebody that can understand him, he's going to fall into this trap and think that there's this romantic connection between them, when really there isn't. I mean, they kind of fall into each other's lap because of this... because she thinks that he's on the same page, and he's not really.
No.
And similarly, you know, he's thinking that he can redeem her. That, oh, hey, you know, if I do this, maybe then, you know, I can prove that I'm not completely damaged and that I'm not, you know, completely irredeemable. And doesn't quite work out for him the way that he hopes it will. But it should have been over a longer period of time. I think we all agree with that. So, any other thoughts on this one, Bronstam?
Nothing springs to mind. It was it was good, but a bit rushed. That's
yeah, and that's why I dropped from I'd had a series of 8s for 5 episodes straight, and I dropped back to a 7 only because it was so rushed, and I felt like they couldn't go as deep as they should have. How about you?
I'd be inclined to go the same. Yeah.
How about you, Edmund?
Well, I'll make it 3 in a row. Yeah, so 7 sounds right.
Okay.
But it says great things about the show that this, for us, this is a disappointing episode. Only a 7.
Right, yeah. Yes. It went back to average. Oh, how terrible. It's still far and above what we've been saying for Once Upon a Time and Burn Notice in this episode. So, wow, this one was an episode full of challenging shows for us. But there we are. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...
I don't know where the next Olympics are at, but you might want to think about signing yourself up. So you want to talk about last night? Okay. Last time you and I spoke, you were on your way to stop Helena Bertinelli from her one-woman war against the Mafia. How'd that work out for you? Nick Salvati, Frank Bertinelli's right hand, was found with his neck snapped, along with a few of his thugs. Was that her or you?
I was with Helena when Salvati jumped us. We didn't have a choice.
We?
She knows, Diggle, about me. It was my secret of her life.
It's not just your secret anymore, Oliver. And this woman is a killer. She's been dropping bodies all over the city.
She's not what you think she is. 3 years ago, she was going to turn her father into the FBI. She put everything she had on him on a laptop. Her father found it, thought it belonged to her fiancé, and had him murdered.
All right, listen, that's a heavy thing, man. But it doesn't change the fact that she is dangerous. And if Burtonelli retaliates against the Triad, or is perceived to, the Triad is going to rain down hell, and innocent people are going to be killed.
She's lost, Diggle. And whether she knows it or not, I can save her. Stop her from doing anything reckless.
That's just it. You can't save her, okay? Some people don't change.
I can help her.
Right. Maybe you think you're more persuasive than you are. Or maybe she thinks she's fine the way she is on her mission of righteous fury. Whatever it is, either way, all of this, it ends badly.
Either way, I gotta try.